Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning, everyone. And we begin, as usual, on Fridays with our weekly Ask the Mayor segment, My Questions and Yours, for Mayor Bill de Blasio at 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Or you can tweet a question, just use the hashtag Ask the Mayor. Mr. Mayor, good morning and welcome back to WNYC.
Good morning, Brian.
Many of our listeners were just hearing detailed reporting on the horrible terrorist attack in New Zealand on our BBC program. And so first, with this apparent white nationalist terrorist attack at two mosques, three terrorists said to have been involved at the last report that I saw. It's half a world away, but is there any response by the city, preventive or otherwise?
Brian, it is a very painful tragedy, and I guarantee you members of the Muslim community here in New York City are feeling it, and Muslim Americans all over the country. You know, we have to respond right here, right now to this. Doesn't matter if it's half a world away, and I liken it to another horrible tragedy, the massacre that occurred within the Tree of Life Synagogue in Pittsburgh, and we're going to approach it the exact same way. We are immediately, NYPD is reinforcing Muslim community centers and mosques, so you'll see a lot of NYPD presence. Of course, folks will be going to pray today. We want them to be supported. I'm reaching out later today to Muslim community leaders to let them know that we will have their back, we will support them. And people are going through a lot of pain and a lot of fear right now, and we have to be there with them. And this is also not just about protecting people and protecting their institutions. It is about sending a message that hate will not be tolerated in New York City, and that we truly embrace our Muslim community, and we will stand up against Islamophobia in all its forms. And I hope all over the Western democratic world that leaders will do the exact same, because anything less than a show of support for communities at this point, a very physical show of support, sends a horrible message. And we have to stand up to these Islamophobic terrorists by showing that our societies will not accept them.
Indeed. And we will be having a local imam on the program later this hour to be part of what you just described. There's no particular report of any copycat threat or any other kind of threat with respect to the New York area that you know of?
At this moment, I have not been informed of any credible and specific threat, but we take these situations very seriously because even when there isn't a threat that we can see through intelligence gathering, tragically, sometimes there are copycat instances. There are people motivated by hate who see an act of hate and get inspired themselves, even if there's no pre-warning or no way we can know who they are. That's why having the very strong police presence is crucial to inhibit anyone from even thinking about it. Also, this is a reminder of the famous phrase, if you see something, say something. It is not just about a package left in the subway. It's also about anyone who's talking about hate and talking about acting on their hate. Many an attack has been stopped because someone overheard a conversation, or you know, someone heard a friend or loved one saying something that was very dangerous and reached out. If anyone hears anything like that, of course, they should call 911 right away and report it. Those are often the kinds of things that stop an act of hate. So everyone really, in one way or another, can be part of the solution. And I say to all New Yorkers today, know that your Muslim fellow New Yorkers are going through a lot of pain, just like our Jewish fellow New Yorkers went through so much pain after the Tree of Life massacre. And, you know, reach out to them, show understanding, because we're all in this together.
And we'll be talking to Manhattan Imam Khalid Latif later this hour. Moving on to some other issues for now, you announced your plan yesterday to build out part of Lower Manhattan into the East River and build movable barriers to protect downtown from storm surges in the future, like happened with Sandy in 2012. And climate change deniers might be skeptical of the need for federal funding for this, but apparently some environmentalists are skeptical too. The group Riverkeeper says it was originally designed in the Bloomberg years as a giveaway to developers, and Riverkeeper says they will fight this like they fought the Westway Highway Plan in the 1980s because of a number of endangered and other fish species whose habitats this would harm are in that particular waterway. Are you anticipating widespread environmental pushback? And what do you say to Riverkeeper?
No, I am not. If there's concern, we're going to meet with people and listen to them and work with them. I think the world of Riverkeeper, I think they've done great work over the years. But on this one, I would caution the science is very damning. We believe in the report we put out that was done by a panel of climate scientists looked at this, believe by the end of this century that Lower Manhattan, portions of Lower Manhattan will be underwater regularly if we don't take action. And we've already, Brian, this is not a new idea. Look what's happening in Miami already. There are parts, you know, there are major cities around the world that are suffering just because of the fact that sea levels are rising. Before you even talk about where we will be decades from now or what happens in the event of a major storm with a storm surge, I mean, we have to protect against this. Lower Manhattan combines a series of features that should make it a national security priority, let alone a local priority. Hundreds of thousands of people live and work there. It's more and more a residential neighborhood. 75% of our subway lines go through there and are vulnerable. It is one of the centerpieces of our economy. 1 in 10 of our jobs in New York City are in Lower Manhattan. It's the capital of the national financial industry, which affects the entire economy. And it's not protected. So the original plan put out by the Bloomberg administration, when we looked at it, we said the motivation to protect Lower Manhattan was the right motivation, but the vision was the wrong vision. It turned out that that seaport city vision, it was much too focused on private development. It was much bigger than it had to be. We actually found that for about 50% of the area of that Lower Manhattan coastline, we could achieve the same resiliency without development and without building out the shoreline. But that particular area around the South Street Seaport and the Financial District is the lowest part of Lower Manhattan. It's the most vulnerable by far. We tried a variety of models to see if there was some other way to protect it. We don't believe there is. We think we have to build out to the end of the pier line, which is about 500 feet at maximum. We might be able to do it with less. And if there's federal funding, which there should be, I mean, Brian, there should be a national resiliency strategy for the coastlines of America. There is not. There is only funding after a disaster, not to stop the disaster. If there is finally, as part of, I hope, a Green New Deal, a national resiliency plan, it would be sufficient to cover something like protecting one of the most sensitive locations in the entire nation. So that's our preference here, to achieve it with federal funding. We'll get started with city money and the planning, but our goal is to achieve this with federal funding.
I saw that you spoke toward the federal government, you know, aimed your remarks toward the federal government yesterday on the importance of their recognizing the urgency of this. Given the urgency, why did it take until 6.5 years after Sandy for this proposal to come out?
Because we had to get it right. The original proposal wouldn't have worked the way that we think makes the most sense. The original proposal, if we had accepted, I mean, it gets back to the critique you started with. If we had accepted that Seaport City initiative, would have taken a lot longer to protect about half of the shoreline because we found quicker and easier ways to do it. It would not have accounted for a number of other concerns that were not ever considered in that proposal, like torrential.
But you've been in office 5 years.
Yeah, but it took a lot of research and a lot of design work and a lot of projecting with experts with new technology and new capacity to determine what made sense. We decided, and I'm happy we did, that there was a much better way to protect a lot of the coastline and that we could do it in a way that did not emphasize private development as much. In the meantime, as I announced yesterday, we've got $500 million in other resiliency projects that are underway right now for Lower Manhattan, for the other parts of Lower Manhattan, the Battery, Battery Park City, the Two Bridges area. Those are all moving forward right now. Farther up the east side, East Side Coastal Resiliency Plan is moving forward. So everything's been a piece. Obviously, we've been moving the initiatives in the Rockaways, in Red Hook and Staten Island. Everything's been moving. But this one was, in many ways, the most complex. It took the most hard work to sort through. But we're convinced now this is the plan. We're going to move on it immediately. But I'm really glad we did not accept the plan that was bequeathed to us, because I think it would have led us in the wrong direction, taken a lot longer, and required private development that we did not think is the optimal way to approach.
One more thing on this. There's also pushback from some outer borough neighborhoods that ask, why such an expensive prioritizing of Lower Manhattan when Sandy turned Howard Beach into Venice? As one tweet puts it, the Rockaways project has sand but no jetties to keep it on the beach. I think that was also written with respect to Seagate and Gerritsen Beach and some other places. So I think it was Katie Honan from the Wall Street Journal who tweeted, so it's like setting money on fire every 10 years, meaning more sand, more sand, more sand. What do you say to those concerns that Wall Street and the business district is getting too much of the emphasis on money?
I think that's a really easy stereotype for some people to present that's absolutely discordant with the facts, and I think anyone who traffics in that is not serious about this issue. For the last 5 years, the focus has been overwhelmingly on outer borough-sensitive locations as part of a $20 billion resiliency plan. That's money that's already moving. This is what I'm talking about with Lower Manhattan, is a brand new $10 billion that we're going to have to get, and again, I hope from the federal government. But the $20 billion that's already moving is going to a whole host of resiliency projects that have either been completed, like the 5.5-mile barrier that is the Rockaway boardwalk, or the work that's been done to replenish beaches and marshes in other areas around the Rockaway, Staten Island, other parts of the city. But there's a host of new Seagate. There's been an immense amount of work done on Seagate already. We just announced a major new effort for the east shore of Staten Island. There's a huge amount of resiliency work that's either been done or has been started or is about to be started with a $20 billion budget. All of that focused on the areas in the outer boroughs that really got hurt hard in Sandy. But let's be clear, Lower Manhattan got hit very hard by Sandy, too. I was there. There were people without electricity, without food, without water. There were businesses destroyed. There were homes made unlivable. And it's a whole lot of people. Let's be clear about the number of people affected. When you talk about both the residences and the jobs, just in the immediate area we're talking about with this plan, it's hundreds of thousands of people. And again, the nexus of our entire subway system and one of the cores of our economy. So I'm from the outer boroughs. We have very much focused on protecting outer borough communities. But we've also got to be clear, this is one of the most vulnerable pieces of the equation. It also happens to be one of the lowest places. It's the lowest part of Lower Manhattan that's very, very vulnerable right now. And it has to be protected for the good of New York City going forward.
I think we have a related call. Let's take Billy on the Bowery. You're on WNYC with the mayor. Hello, Billy.
Hi. I am calling actually about the resiliency plan, specifically the East River Park. I don't know if you've done your due diligence and know what they're planning, but it's an enormously risky, expensive plan to kill our existing park, which is the only park we have, and taking enormous risks. Their plan now, after 4 years of doing an incompetent design that was not possible to build, they're planning on filling the entire park with 8 feet of soil, relying on slurry walls below the park to prevent flooding from the underground water, like the ones that failed in initially in the World Trade Center. And killing the park and filling with 8 feet of soil over a three-year period, there's such a huge risk of failure, of incompletion due to low bidding things. We've already lost our park for 10 years when low bidders couldn't finish fixing it up. It's really an incompetent plan that really needs to be looked at. And there is no master plan for New York. There's another park just south of it that's just using, they don't even know what they're using. There's not one coastal master plan for this. It really needs to be looked at by Army Corps of Engineers. It can't be pushed through blindly like this. It's an enormous risk. And in terms of the buildings have, you know, what's the difference between protection, resiliency? So Con Ed, we lost power. Con Ed has made their building resistant. All the housing, the apartments have moved their generators to the roof so they won't lose their electricity. this needs to be looked at thoroughly from the land view, and also this is not taking care of rain events, and it's they're estimating $1.5 billion.
Billy, let me jump in and get you a response from the mayor on some of this. Mr. Mayor, go ahead and talk to Billy.
Well, Billy, I appreciate the passion, and you've obviously done a lot of homework. I disagree with some of your conclusions, but I understand why you're saying what you're saying. First of all, the idea is to have the park redone in segments so there will be pieces of the park available to the community at all times. And once one segment is done, then another segment is addressed. So we're very sensitive to the fact that people need their park space. On the other hand, we have to create resiliency. And after a lot of research on what would work best and what could be done on a fast time frame but done effectively. Because I get anyone who's cynical about government and some of the mistakes government has made, but it's not fair to therefore say that everything done by government doesn't work or everything done by contractors don't work. There's a tremendous need to create resiliency in this area. And we felt, after looking at the different models, that creating resiliency right at the point of the park was the best way to do it, and that it would protect the neighborhood best and protect the park for the long term, too, so we don't go through another situation like Sandy where the park gets knocked out and we don't have the right kind of resiliency. So this has been a very carefully assessed project. It is being discussed with the community. We have to get going. We always need community input, and it helps us make projects better, but we have to get going. The resiliency issue is one of urgency. But I do want you to know, none of this has been done lightly, and I think when you see more of the facts, you'll be more comfortable that the east side approach is going to work.
Billy, thank you. And John in Eastern Queens, you're on WNYC with the mayor. Hi, John.
Hi there. So we've been working for years to complete the Queens Greenway. This is the Casino Way, connecting the parks from Flushing Meadow all the way to the Long Island border. But the holdup has been the parks and DOT waiting to get an estimate for the design. So we wanted to know how long you think it's acceptable to wait for an estimate for an estimate. We've been waiting a few years already.
That's a great, John, I appreciate your question. And I don't know the state of play of that estimate, but I think the important thing is for us to get an answer and make a decision. I think New Yorkers appreciate straight talk, if you will, and appreciate straight up discussion of the issues. So I will find out, and Brian, we can raise it on an upcoming show, what the timeline is for getting that estimate so we can make that decision up or down.
All right, we will do that. John, thank you. Lamine in the Bronx, you're on WNYC with the mayor. Hello, Lamine.
Hi, Brian, thank you for taking my call. I have a complaint. First of all, I would like to comment mail.
Whoops, are we losing
can
you,
we
Lamine?
Hear him?
Lamine?
In terms of our
there you go,
audience,
there you go.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
You're breaking up a little bit, but I think you're okay now. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm driving, so that's what I think. Yeah, we've seen some improvement in our earnings. But I have a complaint against TLC, the investigation unit.
Go ahead.
I believe they've been harassing most of us.
The TLC, the Taxi and Limousine Commission investigation unit, you feel is harassing drivers?
They are asking a lot of drivers. The point is, I believe they believe that most of the drivers are immigrants and most of them are illegal. So they don't know how to read and write. They keep writing claims like we have a complaint against you. We have this against you that a pedestrian complained like you illegally park here or you do this. And then the next thing you will see is they will send a letter that you pay a settlement of a fine of $100 or $200, or they will revoke your license if you fail to comply. And then, if you don't pay that, most of the people, you know, when they see those kind of things, they will be like, oh, you know what, I have to pay these settlements. I believe they're doing this as a scam. I have experienced this. And the last time I went there, I told them, I am not an illiterate. I'm not paying any settlement. I'm a Kinney student. I'm doing this, and I'm happy doing this because I'm able to work this 3 days, weekend.
Let me jump in and get a little clarification from you. Are you saying that the TLC is doing this to make money off basically law-abiding drivers for the city?
Exactly. I believe their job is to make life easy for drivers and helping drivers.
Thank you, and Mr. Mayor, I'm sure you're going to say that's not what they're doing, but I'm sure there are a lot of drivers who feel like that is.
Well, I want to say several things. First of all, Lamine, please give your information to WNYC so we can follow up. Any situation where someone has been mistreated by a government employee or treated in a discriminatory fashion, we don't accept that, and we will follow up on that. We will act if we find evidence that someone did not do their job properly as a public servant. So I want our folks to hear about what happened to you and to make sure that if anyone treated you inappropriately, it's addressed. I also want to say I disagree with one characterization when you say the job of the folks who do inspections and investigations is to make life easier for the drivers. I respectfully disagree. The job of the TLC is to make sure we have a fair and just system for regulating an industry that's absolutely crucial to our city, including making sure drivers have a fair experience. That's why we moved forward, for example, on putting some limits on the for-hire vehicle expansion, because we saw a lot of drivers losing wages and having a tougher and tougher life as working people, and we wanted to protect people. So that is the broad approach of the TLC. But if you're talking about a unit that's supposed to deal with problems and infractions, their job is to go out there with fairness, with justice, and act on problems they see. If they do that properly, it's part of maintaining a functioning transportation system. If anyone does that excessively or unfairly in a discriminatory fashion, we don't accept that. So let's get down to the bottom of what happened to you, or if you have other examples we should know about, we will follow up on them, because I don't want to see drivers mistreated, but I do want to see real rules that are implemented fairly.
And he did allege a discriminatory pattern, because he said the TLC sees drivers as so many illegal immigrants in that population, and therefore without the power to fight back.
I've been working on this issue now for 6 years, and I honestly, Brian, have not heard that from drivers and from other observers of this industry, that there's that kind of particular problem. I really haven't. Anyone who's watching sees that drivers are, to their great credit, well-organized, fighting for their rights, and we've worked closely with them on a whole host of changes that need to happen in the industry to support working people. So I have not heard that allegation in any meaningful way, but if there's evidence of it, we must address it, and we will.
Richard on Staten Island. You're on WNYC with the mayor. Hi, Richard.
Good morning. My question, right now, of course, Staten Island is $7.26 to drive back to Staten Island with the Metro, with their Easy Pass. With congestion pricing, is that $7.26 going to be rolled into the congestion pricing fee?
Yeah, Richard, so on the idea of congestion pricing, the plan the governor and I put forward, clearly the vision is that anytime you pay a toll, that is discounted from whatever it would take to get into that central area of Manhattan. If you go over the Verrazano, if you go through the Battery Tunnel, whatever it may be. Now, that said, the ultimate decision makers here, of course, are the state legislature. State Senate, State Assembly has to agree to the specifics of this package, and then I'm sure there'll be a lot of work after the vote to work out a lot of details. But the vision here is not to ask people to pay twice, but to take whatever they put into their previous toll for that ride and discount it over the cost of going into the central part of Manhattan.
You know, we had the Majority Leader of the State Senate yesterday, Andre Stewart Cousins, and one of the issues that's apparently holding up congestion pricing is that people from the northern suburbs want that same reduction as he would get for going over the Verrazano Bridge, for going over the Tappan Zee Mario Cuomo Bridge, or the George Washington Bridge into Manhattan. Do you support that?
I am not going to get, I'm being very upfront with you, Brian, I'm not going to get into the different permutations. My job is to focus on the 8.6 million people that I represent. I certainly have faith that Leader Stewart Cousins and the State Senate and the State Assembly, they're going to look at all of the issues. What I care about is that, one, by April 1st, we must pass a plan to save our subways and our buses. If we don't do it now, it's to be our last best chance to do it. So there has to be urgency that we're getting to a plan. We're going to fully fund, or at least much better fund, the MTA so we can move forward. There has to be fairness in that plan. There has to be, you know, a way of ensuring that transit deserts in the outer boroughs get specific designated funding. There has to be a lockbox to protect money that's meant to go to New York City subway and bus initiatives to make sure it actually gets there. So there's really clear things that are part of the plan that, to me, are the essence. But the most important thing is to get something done while we have a chance, because the reality on subways is intolerable for most strap hangers. And I've been out in the subways talking to people, and they all say it. We got to have a plan now, and there's been a lot of support for the plan the governor and I put forward. So as to the specifics, the legislature gets to, you know, figure out how to strike that balance, but the one thing we cannot have is that April 1st comes and goes and there's no plan.
We've taken calls so far from Manhattan, the Bronx, Queens, and Staten Island. Let's complete the quintfecta and go to Alex.
Is that a word?
I just made it up. Well, let's see. If it's a trifecta, then would it be a quadfecta and a quintfecta?
A new word.
I might have just invented that word, but I like it. Alex in Greenpoint, you're on WNYC with the mayor.
Here we go. Hey, Mr. Mayor. My name is Alex. I'm originally from the Jersey Shore. I've been a Brooklyn resident for the past 8 years now. And today I'm representing the hospitality industry that we all know New York thrives upon, people that care about our environment, and then businesses that are, you know, are offering the hospitality industry products like my companies that are trying to reduce the amount of plastic waste that goes into our oceans. So there's kind of a roadblock right now because we're trying to sell and offer restaurants, hotels, bars in the, around the city a drinking straw that is compostable, made from a wheat stem, but it's not wrapped. So, you know, they're afraid of getting hit with the health department regulations because the plastic straws have always been wrapped. So there's a roadblock for us getting to them, and then they're afraid of purchasing an alternative straw. Even if it's not ours, it could be a paper straw. I'm not sure if you've tried anything besides the plastic ones. You know, there are a lot of alternatives out there. So I would like to get an update on the issue now, because a lot of cities around the country and the world are banning plastic straws. The whole EU by 2020, and a handful of cities, California, you know, they have to.
And let me jump in and get a response from the mayor for you on the issue and also the particular kind of what he says environmentally friendly product that he's got there.
Alex, first of all, please give your information to WNYC, because I would like folks from our team to follow up with you and see, for not just for you, but for anyone presenting these alternative products, that we are not creating artificial roadblocks. We want to make sure all these options get on the table. And we can address the health issues and the other issues, but we got to make sure people are in a dialogue. So please follow up, and we will too. Second, I think we should absolutely ban plastic straws. I think we should ban plastic bags. I think they're very destructive to our environment, and they're made from fossil fuels, and we have to get away from the fossil fuel industry, which is why we have divested from fossil fuels here in this city in terms of our pension investments. The bigger issue you raise, so I will say, little generational moment here, Brian. I grew up with a thing called paper straws. You know, I'm here. I'm still alive. The paper straws did not compromise my health. I had a great time. I enjoyed a lot of sodas with them. Everything's great. So, yeah, there's paper straws. There's all sorts of options. But the plastic straw has to be a thing of the past. And I really admire folks in hospitality and a lot of other industries that are trying to move things very aggressively, because this is an important part of the equation. The folks who are coming up with the better products. You know, we've banned styrofoam. And part of why we were able to do that was there's, you know, compostable products now that have come along that are just as good. So, we need to do the bans and make it easier to use the new environmentally friendly products.
So, Alex from Greenpoint, we'll take your contact information off the air, as the mayor invited you to do. And by the way, Mr. Mayor, while the call was on, my producer, Mary, looked it up, and Merriam-Webster does not recognize quintfecta, but the Urban Dictionary does have a definition, a time in a business when it reaches all of its top five major goals. And We're not a business, but we are happy to, as a not-for-profit news organization, have reached all five boroughs in calls for you today.
Congratulations on your quinfecta. I'm now going to start using the word because of you've made it totally a part of the language now, Brian.
Let me touch on a couple of things before you go. Politico New York is reporting that you made an unannounced visit to participate in a discussion about anti-Semitism hosted by the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee as the lobbying outfit, commonly known as AIPAC, comes under increased scrutiny within the Democratic Party. Why not listed publicly, and why AIPAC in particular, given its reputation as having a right-wing bent?
Well, first of all, this happened to be a house party that someone I know invited me to, and it wasn't clear I could make it until the very end. So that's why it was, a small event, not a big public event. Any big public event, we obviously post. And look, I would say this. I believe as a progressive and as a Democrat, we have to address fundamentally the challenge of anti-Semitism that's very clear and alive in this city and in this nation and this world. We have to address Islamophobia equally. We've got to be, progressives and Democrats have to be the voices of taking on all forces of hate and exclusion equally.
But you could say, I'm not going to do that at AIPAC, I'm going to do that at J Street or
something more liberal. Well, I will do it happily at all of the above. I have a lot of respect for J Street, and I'm happy to work with them. But I also think, from my experience with folks in AIPAC that represent a broad range of views, there's folks from, Democrats, Republicans, or folks more conservative, more liberal, they do believe strongly in protecting the state of Israel, as do I. But it's very important right now that people of goodwill talk to each other and focus on this fight against anti-Semitism. We've had a huge uptick in anti-Semitic incidents in this city, which is not acceptable. And I think it's important to speak out, and I think it's important to work with people. But I also think it's important for people to work across the different communities to fight Islamophobia, to fight anti-Semitism, sexism, racism. We all need to be doing this together. And I'll go to different types of organizations with that same message. This is a message I have put forward before, and I'll continue doing it.
And last thing, and we have about a minute left. I see you were at a breakfast with Schools Chancellor Carranza today. And I have a question on behalf of the thousands of anxious New York City families waiting to find out what high schools their kids got admitted to for next year. Last year it was March 7th, which is typical. Here we are on the 15th and nothing. And in fact, yesterday, the 14th, was the deadline for a lot of conflicted families to have to put down a lot of money for private school if they were considering that. Can you tell everyone where the heck are the admission letters?
Yeah, they are going out on Monday, and there's a delay specifically because of a legal action that was brought against the DOE that we had to address. And I never like to see the court system interfere with our ability to function and serve our parents, but from what we understood, there was no way around this. But they are going out on Monday. And to all parents, I'm sorry that there's been this delay, and I understand because I went through it too with both my kids. But you'll start to get your answers in the course of the week, and wishing everyone very good luck that they get answers they feel good about, and this will all be resolved this coming week.
All right. We end on breaking news, folks. The high school letters are going out on Monday. Mr. Mayor, thank you as always. Talk to you next week.
Thank you, Brian.